passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
And welcome back. Second half of the show is live. It's been a busy one so far, and we'll continue to grab your phone calls. Right now, we have a guest that we do want to talk to, and Scott Rabelais covers the Tigers for The Advocate, and certainly it is the game of the weekend. And we want to find out what Scott thinks about the situation. And talking to Brian Kelly yesterday, I detected a lot of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, and I don't know if that's good or bad considering how poor the defense has played all year. Scott, good afternoon. Thanks so much for being here, and give us the lay of the land down there.
Hey, Paul. Always a pleasure to be with you. Yeah, LSU, really is – they're getting very thin at cornerback. Zay Alexander hurt himself returning an interception on the last play of the Army game 2 weeks ago. He's going to be out for an extended period of time. You've got to figure it's an ankle or a knee or something like that. And then Makai Wingo, maybe their top defensive tackle, sat out the Army game. We thought, well, he's going to set out the open date and he's going to be ready to go for Alabama. He's been battling some injuries all year long. He's had surgery. Don't know what kind of surgery, but he's supposed to be out for 6 weeks. So LSU's down two starters, and so they've got some depth on the defensive line, but the cornerback, they're going to end up playing a converted safety in Sage Ryan, who's been starting out there for a while, and then probably a freshman or a sophomore with very little experience. So it's not the best way to go in for what has been a beleaguered but somewhat improving defense in the last couple of games. Not the best way for them to go into Tuscaloosa, but if you're a fan of just college football and you want to see a exciting game, it probably makes it more likely you're going to see a shootout on Saturday night in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, and I'm not being flippant when I say that LSU can't be any worse on defense, because they can, and they may be, but how do you make up for those losses for a defense that was already really getting torched?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, you know, they have some other good players. Justin Jefferson, not related to the Jeffersons, Justin Jefferson and Jordan Jefferson, who played for LSU in years past. But he may be, Brian Kelly said, he might be their best graded defensive tackle so far this season. So, and that doesn't surprise me. He's a good player. Mason Smith is finally rounding into form. He missed all of last season, was suspended for the Florida State game by the NCAA.
Wasn't he supposed to be great this year?
He was supposed to be great. He hasn't been great yet. He's starting to make a few more plays. No, you're absolutely right. He hasn't been great. And then Harold Perkins, who they mistake, tried to force him to be an inside linebacker and just took away his natural, freelance and instinctive abilities to go after the ball and after the quarterback. They put him back on the edge, and he's kind of in a role now that our beat writer, Wilson Alexander, describes as kind of a nickel linebacker position sometimes. But I think you're going to see him pressuring Jalen Milroe a lot. Obviously, Alabama has given up a lot of sacks this year. I think LSU's best hope on defense, to me, is to disrupt their offense, to get them in some really second and long and third and long situations, and to maybe force a turnover to get some sacks. Because they're likely to give up some big plays to an Alabama offense that hasn't been as prolific as LSU's offense, but they're also good at making the big plays.
I'm trying to come up with a way to point of reference in terms of someone who has stopped Jaden Daniels, which forces me to go back to the first game of the year. And what happened during that game that, from a defensive standpoint, it's been so long I've really forgotten, that slowed and at times maybe even stymied Jaden Daniels in the LSU offense?
I would say it was pressure and some pretty good coverage by Florida State. He still threw for like 360 yards in the game, but you might remember the game was kind of close. Like Florida State had a small LSU led at halftime, and they just got steamrolled in the second half, kind of like Alabama steamrolled Tennessee a couple weeks ago. And he threw an interception. I think Neighbors slipped on a route, and the defensive back returned the ball and set up a score, and that kind of sealed LSU's fate. And then he threw a late long touchdown pass to Brian Thomas, but it was pretty much cosmetic. So he threw for some yards, and that's really been the only bad half he's had all year. And he's been tremendous. I mean, he comes in the game, he leads the nation in passing efficiency. He leads the nation in total offense. He's third in passing yards per game. He's just been a second in points responsible for. He's just been a tremendous player. And, of course, maybe the ultimate dual threat quarterback in the country right now.
So if you're trying to stop him, and you know, Ole Miss had a reasonably good defense, and he lit them up. I mean, is there a path to? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, what do you think Alabama is going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying this to try to just be an LSU guy or anything like that. It's really hard to do. You know, it's like the 19 offense, and Joe Burrow described. If the defense does this, right, LSU is going to do that. And if they do that, they're going to do this. The defense always is wrong, is what Joe said. And you're kind of in a situation here. You're going to bracket Malik Nabers. Well, then Brian Thomas, you know, you put him in one-on-one coverage, and he leads the nation in receiving touchdowns, and Malik Nabers leads the nation in receiving yards. And then Kyron Lacy is kind of like the Terrace Marshall of this group, the third receiver who you don't want to forget about either. Then you have a tight end in Mason Smith. And they got the run-pass option with Logan Diggs, who really has been – I would say someone, you know, there's so much focus on Jaden and the passing, and rightly so, but his emergence as the lead running back, you know, the transfer from Notre Dame, who didn't play, didn't play the Florida State game, his emergence as the lead running back and helping LSU to be so well balanced, I mean, 338 passing and 213 rushing, something like that, it's really helped them be as prolific as they are. And of course, then you have Jaden's running ability. He's liable to take off if you cover everybody, and he's more likely now than he was last year to go through his progressions and wait to throw the ball. But he's likely to take off and get a 25-yard, 30-yard gain. I guess, you know, if I'm Alabama, I'm trying to confuse him with different kind of coverages, and look, mix and match coverages and looks. And obviously they have some, you know, very good defensive backs led by McHistory. But it's a headache. It's got to be a real headache to try to figure out how to defend them.
In this matchup, and I normally don't get this in the weeds, but it just seems to me, as I talked to a former head coach today about a number of possessions game, and it sounds as cliche as anybody could say, but he said LSU's path is really forcing a turnover or two, and then it becomes an uneven distribution of possessions, and that heavily favors LSU. I'm telling you stuff you already know, but I'm trying to frame the game for the fans who are, you know, bullheaded in whatever side they think is going to win.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think LSU is going to totally stop Alabama. Like I said, they've hit a lot of big plays this year. Milroe has 12 of his 13 touchdown passes over 15 yards, 6 of them over 40 yards. I'd be surprised if he doesn't hit a couple of those against LSU with the state of their secondary. But if LSU can get Harold Perkins to him, and of course they've given up about 4 sacks a game, if you can get to him, force a turnover, get him in a really adverse situation, like late in the Missouri game, which was where LSU's season kind of started to turn to where they are now. Yeah, they were only up 3, and Missouri had the ball, and they hit Cook and stripped him, and then Missouri wound up with like a 3rd and 20-something, you know, and they eventually couldn't convert it. LSU got they got the ball back, but LSU got a pick 6 for the final margin. So they've got to get Alabama like that. Just be disruptive enough, and you know, if you can force a punt or two, that's great. And certainly if they get in the red zone, field goals compared to touchdowns, because I think both teams are going to have to score in the 30s to expect to win the game at least.
In terms of what happens if LSU wins, and it's pretty obvious the season is laid out and LSU's path is clear, but a third loss would be pretty severe at this point. And you know, Brian Kelly talked about the other day that, you know, we're not at Alabama or Georgia's level, but it didn't stop a lot of people from picking them to win the league when the year began. What's changed?
Well, you know, obviously, I think people thought the defense would be better and the offense wouldn't be as good. You know, they've stumbled out of the gate 4 straight years now, you know, with a season-opening loss, the last 2 to Florida State. And then, you know, to go to Ole Miss, there was a game, it was a game they should have won. I mean, LSU goes on the road and scores 49 points in an SEC game. They should win the game. You know, I mean, it shouldn't be a game that you come back a loser with. And so I think for a lot of people observing LSU, 9-3 would be the floor for this team, and the ceiling would have been, you know, contending for the national championship. And obviously they look very much like, if I could even say that they're a dark horse to make the college football playoff at this point, but certainly they can win this game and win the West with old Florida and Texas A&M at home left on the schedule. Still got to deal with Ole Miss, but it's a very interesting, so it's a very interesting scenario. It would be disappointing. I mean, you know, obviously to have this offense, which is at worst the second best offense in school history at this point, to have this kind of offense and not to at least win the division would be disappointing. And yet, of course, it's that and Jaden Daniels' Heisman candidacy. It's all rolled in for LSU. This is, Paul, this is what just, and I'm sure other fan bases share this. This is what just drives LSU fans up the wall year after year after year. Everything comes down to the Alabama game. Everything comes down to the Alabama game. It's your season. It's the division. It's a chance to win the SEC or certainly the West. It's Jaden Daniels going to New York for the Heisman ceremony. It's always Alabama, and I think if they go to the 8-game schedule, some of them won't be disappointed not to play Alabama every year.
And a lot of schools, Scott, they get close to beating Alabama and they just can't get over the hump, and for whatever reason. But LSU has done this now. They did it in 19. They did it last year. I realize these are different players, although not that many considering what happened a year ago. But does that factor in, or am I just trying to sound like a talking head on TV?
I mean, look, in 19 they won. 20, Alabama obviously had a great team, you know, that with a great offense that won the national championship, and then they blew LSU out. LSU had a, you know, very poor follow-up, and they greased to the national title and greased Ed Orgeron's path out of town. 2011, they gave them all they wanted. It was a 20-14 game, and right. LSU, you know, was blitzing them. You know, Ed's like, what the heck? I'm already out of here. You know, let's blitz. Let's go after them. And gave them all they wanted. And then, of course, last year's game was, and I'm not just saying this because LSU won, it was about as probably the most thrilling game I've ever seen in Tiger Stadium. I mean, just with all that surrounded the game and who they were playing and Brian Kelly's first year and, you know, really kind of, you know, won over a lot of the LSU fan base with him. You know, it's always such a big game, and it's always thrilling, and this one promises to be another one of those chapters. But yeah, LSU can look back on very recent history and think about, if they win this game, obviously it's far from a fait accompli. But if they can win this game, that's 3 out of 5, the last 5 against Alabama. That's not something a lot of people can say, if you say Alabama is not quite what they used to be.
Nobody can say that in recent years. Many thanks. Great to talk to Scott Rabelais from The Advocate. We'll check in with him when it's all over. We head to the break right now.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back finally with some phone calls, and let's check in with Glenn in Denver. Hello, Glenn.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you some questions. I know what the answers are. So listening to what Dabo said, let me ask you, do you think any of these fallen coaches I'm going to tell you would do that? Do you think Mike Krzyzewski would have done that?
Krzyzewski was extremely thin-skinned, but I don't think he would have ever done that in a similar setting. No.
Got it. How about Pat Summitt?
Not a chance.
How about Paul Bear Bryant?
No.
How about Pat Dye?
No.
You know, I was looking, because I'm a big fan of John Wooden. John Wooden said that if you discipline yourself, others won't need to. And by listening to what Dabo said, that first of all, I think Jimbo Fisher and Jim Harbaugh need to send him a gift for taking the heat off of them this week. But if he's that riled up over some fan who he's never met, then how he's going to handle the pressures of these big games like Notre Dame? That's a big game coming up.
No, and by the way, we'll try to play that cut again of Dabo in a minute, because I think a lot of people may have just hopped on board. But you're right, and I agree. I had the pleasure of talking to John Wooden a couple of times, and I think he is the benchmark for every great axiom in coaching.
Well, he is. And by the way, like I do some athletic coaching. I volunteer when I can, and I use a lot of his stuff because it's wonderful. And, you know, one other thing he said is, like, you know, you don't treat everyone the same. You treat them what they deserve. But if you have a fan who called you and says, me and my family has been going to Clemson games for generations, like, that is the true badge of a true fan. And why would Dabo want to alienate every booster in that program? So let's say in two years.
Well, no, you're 100% right. I apologize, but I remember I read a book about Sam Walton once, who founded Walmart, and his philosophy was, and is that the customer's always right. You don't argue with the people. And what Dabo said that was so egregious, I thought, forget all the poppycocking about his career, but when he said, I answer to the Board of Trustees, I don't answer to you. Well, that's not exactly accurate. The Board of Trustees, the school represents the people of that area, of that state.
Well, Paul, I can tell you, just even someone who's done coaching a far lot less than Dabo has, like when I coached high school basketball, now I coach my son's second grade flag football team, I answer first to my players and to the parents.
Yes.
That's who I'm responsible for. And Dabo doesn't realize he alienated every player. Not only he's on the Clemson roster, but he wants to come.
You're right. You're right.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate the time.
Glenn, thank you. I tell you, if we can, let me know if we have it back in the control room. I'd like to play Dabo's rant again that we played at the very beginning of the show. It's a little bit long, but I think it's worth. I think it's worth listening to again. This is a guy named Tyler called in, and we played that, and I don't want to play the whole thing again. It's just too long. Tyler essentially asked some very legitimate questions. He said he was a military man. He had questions all laid out. He was very polite. He was he talked about faith. He talked, but he essentially asked Dabo, considering what's going on. He asked about his salary, which is nearly $12 million, and this is Dabo's response last night.
Hey Tyler, I'm listening to this for you, Tyler. You can have all your opinions that you want, right? I don't know how old you are. Don't really care, right? But let me tell you something. We won 11 games last year, and you're part of the problem. To be honest with you, because that is part of the problem. It's people like you that all you do is the appreciation. The expectation is greater than the appreciation, and that's the problem. And so, you know, we've won 12 10-plus win year, seasons in a row. That's happened three times in 150 years. So if you want to know why, Clemson ain't sniffed a national championship for 35 years. We've won two in 7 years. And there's only two other teams that can say that, Georgia and Alabama. Okay? Is this a bad year? And it's my responsibility. Take 100% responsibility for it. And all this bull crap you're taking, all these narratives you read, listen, man, you can have your opinion all you want, and you can apply for the job, and good luck to you, all right? But to answer your question, all right, we're second in draft picks. We've graduated 98% of our guys. We're second in wins, all right? If you want to know why, again, I'm telling you, we're not perfect. There's a lot of teams that, you know, Frank Howard never had a bad year. Coach Ford never had a bad year. Nobody, Coach K, has never had a bad year in basketball. People have a bad year. But the part of the problem is the appreciation. I used to tell people all the time and say, what's the difference in Clemson? I'm going to tell you, at some places there's an expectation, but at Clemson there's an appreciation. And what's happened at Clemson is we've won so much that even when it used to be the funds and the winning, now even when you win, people like you complain and criticize the coaches, and question everything. People like you, all right? When I hired Tony Elliott to be the offensive coordinator who never called a play in his life, I'm sure you were critical then, all right? And he took us to two national championships. People like you who just love to destroy people with your comments, all right? I'm sure you've never made any bad decisions. I'm sure you've lived a perfect life. I'm sure you've led a bunch of people. I'm sure you do your job in front. So to answer your question, I started as the lowest paid coach in this freaking business, all right? And I'm where I am because I've worked my ass off every single day. And I ain't going to let some smart-ass kid get on this phone and create this stuff. So if you got a problem with that, I don't care, all right? I work for the Board of Trustees, the President, and the AD. And if they're tired of me leading this program, all they got to do is let me know. I'll go somewhere else where there is an appreciation, all right? It's not just winning. It's how you win. And we are in a – this is a tough year. But we've had 10-plus win seasons in a row. 12. We lost to Tennessee last year. They won 11 games for the first time in like 20 years. We've had 8-11 win seasons in whatever, 11 years or whatever. We've won 2 national championships. Clemson went 35 years. All right, probably since before you were born, your whole freaking life. And we've won 2 in 7 years. And we earned it. And we beat the best of the best to do it. The best of the best. 12, 10 plus win seasons. So if you want to know why, that's why. Am I perfect? Nope. I'm far from it. I am a man of faith. Absolutely. All right? I'm 53 years old, and there ain't one thing in my life. I have been a part of failure many times, but there ain't one thing in my life that I've ever failed at, Tyler. Never. All right? Ever. I wanted to get an education. I got 2 degrees. I wanted to be the first college in my grad with my family. I did it. I wanted to go play football in Alabama. I earned a scholarship, lettered 3 years, worked my ass off, won a national championship. I wanted to get into coaching. I worked my way to being a head coach. And when I got this job, and I'm sure you didn't want me to get this job, all right, and 15 years later, I'm still here. And I'd say the results are what they are, and I stand on them. So you don't ever have to call back. I wanted to get married. I've been married for going on 30 years. I wanted to be a father. I've raised 3 great sons. If you don't like how I run the program, don't be a fan. I don't care. But I'm the head coach, and I'm going to do what I believe is right for the long term of this program, what's best for the players, and what I think is best for the moment. If you got a problem with that, that's fine. But you're not, I'm not going to sit here and let you call. I don't give a crap how much money I make. You ain't going to talk to me like I'm 12 years old. You'd be freaking kidding me.
We are back. A few more. Let's get some phone calls. Reaction here. Jim is next.
Oh, I got to. I didn't know he's. I've never seen. Paul, that is the epitome. I mean, the epitome of a stupid, stinking jerk. I told you he was a jerk, but I didn't know he'd become. He's advanced. You're talking about progression, and he tries to. The worst thing about. Not the worst thing, but one of the most insulting things. He's trying to imitate his hero, the best coach in the country, Nick Saban. You hear him say 5 or 6 times. But I have never heard a more scumbag as a coach. I don't see how, Paul. You know I'm upset. But I mean, I can't contain myself sometimes. How in the hell? How in the world did anybody? How did he get any recruits? I can't understand it. I can't understand how that freaking, and he called it his job, he called it a freaking business. And if he thinks about his business that way, that tells you what he's about. He has no respect for anything he does. He has no respect for people. And if Alabama, you know, that's thinking one thing, I knew it already. He ain't got no chance of being a water boy at Alabama. Never, ever. I'd be over every day. I wouldn't take but one day and say, you can't hire this guy. And I guarantee you, they're not going to hire him. He ought to be gone. That guy is horrible. I mean, I know I can't stop, Paul. I've never seen anything like that. Never, ever, ever. Tell me what you think.
Well, no, you're right. I don't think he had any chance of ever getting that Alabama job, but I can tell you right now, there are people in Tuscaloosa that slam the...
I'm one of them.
He won't get invited to do anything there anymore.
And that got me because they gave him an award about, what, a few months ago, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. And they did.
That burns my, you know what, I mean, telling what he did. There's people that work their tail off and don't get nothing for it, don't get any recognition. And that fool, he's a fool. I better watch what I say, Paul. There's a chance he might be the lowest on the totem pole Christian, and you're not supposed to call anybody. But I don't think he is a Christian. I don't think any Christian. I know I'm a Christian, and I don't sound like it a lot of times, but I never would do what he does. I'd never be that way. And the poor kid, I mean, the poor kid just did exactly what he's got a right to do. Question the stupid-ass coach, and that's what he did. And he did it in a nice way. I've never seen nothing that bad, Paul. He ought to be – they ought to get rid of him. Can't they run a coach out off like that? Not just talking about Clemson. I'm talking about people like Sankey.
Well, I'm not – I don't think – he first of all, what he should have done today, and he didn't, by the way, he laughed it off, should have apologized to the kid, the guy. That would have ended this conversation, but instead Dabo doubled down and in his typical way laughed it off like he always does.
I'm glad you played that. And I just walked out of a store, and I'm glad I was able to hear that, because he's like my dad. He said about some kids that I used to run around with. He said, "Son, they're bad eggs." He's a bad egg, Paul. A bad seed, you know. That's what that guy is. I better shut up, because I know I'm being a hypocrite to some extent, because I'm probably not any better than he is in a lot of ways. But I have never seen anybody in professional anything be that stupid and absurd and ludicrous and just outrageously wrong. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll take a short break. Back with more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Great conversation with Ari Wasserman of The Athletic. So much going on. You would think with the CFP coming out tonight, and that would be the topic, or Dabo. But a couple of college football stories remain simply impossible to turn your head away from. And the biggest one in the country right now is the University of Michigan. Let's talk to Ari as we await to hear the rankings tonight. Ari, thanks so much for the time. With so much to talk about, I do want to start with Michigan. Your thoughts on where it is and where this story may be going.
Yeah, I think it's just, I mean, to use a word, bizarre. You know, as we go week by week, day by day, we're seeing more and more stuff come out about Connor Stallions and this Spygate scenario. And, you know, the latest being on Tuesday with the Central Michigan sideline, and whether it's him or it's not him. And, you know, frankly speaking, it does seem like we're past the point of speculation as it pertains to Michigan being involved in some sort of conduct that's a little bit outside of the rules, if not a lot of it outside of the rules. But as far as, you know, how deep this goes, who's involved, Jim Harbaugh's knowledge of it, how much the information that they've gotten has helped aid them in their rise the last 2 years. All of these questions that I think are going to, you know, we're going to get answers to eventually. I think that's when we'll really know how deep this goes. But right now I'm kind of like with everybody else, just taking it day by day and trying my best to remain level-headed about it. And in my personal podcasting and writing and all that stuff, I've made the decision to continue to report and write columns and discuss Michigan for the merits of their current team and, you know, where they could be headed in the way that they're playing the game. And as more information comes out as it pertains to Jim Harbaugh and the entire staff, I think we'll get a clear picture of how this is going to wind up. But it's certainly bizarre, and it seems like every day we're getting a new twist and turn, and it's getting deeper and more weird. And it just, I think, could, you know, have a chance to be one of the weirdest stories of college football history. And that, saying something considering how quirky the sport is.
And I think tonight we'll get the first when the chairman of the committee is asked about it. I mean, I think we could have a bar game and try to come up with, you know, how tortured or contorted it's going to be. But I think we all would agree, would we not, that it's not going to affect the committee at all.
Well, I think it would be irresponsible for the committee to, you know, make judgments on this sort of thing before all the information is out. So, you know, what the committee is going to have to do, and I think what they should do, is judge Michigan based on the merits of their schedule, how they've played, how they've looked, and, you know, all the normal course of action. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out in the next month. And a month is going to be a long time between now and the last playoff reveal. Now, the question I do have is, you know, the committee is not robots. It's made up of people who have thoughts and feelings and, you know, bias or not, have consumed or will have be aware of the news that we're all talking about right now. And there's a word that pops up a lot in the college football playoff committee's, you know, breakdowns of the decisions that they make. And it doesn't really matter right now, and it won't matter next week or the week after, but the word tiebreaker is a very interesting dynamic here in the sense of, you know, where will Michigan be ranked tonight? I would anticipate them being in the top four somewhere. But at the end of the year, if Florida State, Washington, Georgia, like if the disaster scenarios come true and there are undefeated teams or a decision to make as it pertains to which team should go over the other, I'd be very curious to know whether or not that would creep into the back of their minds. Again, I think right now that would be irresponsible, but certainly something to track as we see how the season plays out and, of course, how the story continues to develop.
Ari Wasserman, who's so great at looking at the talent, analyzing it, spitting it out, and computing it, which brings us to tonight. And we'll all be opining and tomorrow and for the rest of the week. And Ari, I don't want to take anything away. I mean, we're eager to see what this committee says. But how much does it matter, and what is really the most salient things to look for tonight in trying to figure out these next 5 weeks?
Well, I think that as the years go on and the playoff committee releases their rankings, all of us in the media and the fans have become more accustomed to understanding what to expect in terms of how they operate. And how they operate is by weighing heavily teams that have quality wins and strength of schedule and all of those things. So, you know, how much do the rankings matter tonight? Probably not all that much, because there's a hell of a lot of football left to be played and things that still need to be determined. But, you know, where a team comes out, excuse me, in the initial rankings tends to, you know, give you a clue into how the committee views them.
And because, I mean, they're going to be, I mean, is it your opinion, because a lot of people believe this, that Ohio State's going to be number one based on what they have accomplished?
Yeah, I mean, if we're doing based on what I believe the committee is going to do, I think that Ohio State will probably be number one, considering they've beaten Notre Dame and they got that win against Penn State a few weeks ago. And then, of course, I think, you know, Wisconsin's a borderline top 25 team that'll, you know, probably play a factor into it. If I were ranking them, I might not put them number one. But the thing that I'm most interested in, and I know your listeners probably love to hear this, is where they spot Georgia this year. Are they going to be in the top five or the top four coming out as the two-time defending national champions, or are they going to be outside of it? Because you have a case to be made for Michigan, Florida State, Washington, all of whom are still undefeated and perceived to be the class of the sport this year, and Georgia, while also undefeated, lacks the resume that most other teams have. So, you know, personally speaking, I was at the Georgia game last week, and I watched what they did to Florida, and I know what that team is made out of, and I know what they're capable of. I might put them number one. I think they're the best team in college football this year, but I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility that it could be five on Tuesday evening.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I just you know, everybody thinks we just rank them. They're number one because of the past. That's not it. I mean, they've shown up lately. And before you go, quick question about a game this weekend that we've talked to you about Alabama in the past and analyzing what they have, and a lot of what you said early on is starting to come true. I mean, there is enormous talent on that team, and if you don't think there was talent, they've had talent on other teams. You should have been watching Football Sunday when you had Will Anderson and Bryce Young starting in one game, and Jamar Gibbs last night setting the entire Monday Night Football thing on fire. What about Saturday night in terms of this matchup? Your thoughts on LSU at Alabama?
Well, I read a stat somewhere today. I don't remember where I read it, but that if LSU wins, Daniels will be the first quarterback.
Correct.
Since Drew Brees to beat. God, when you start thinking about the statistics of what that guy's done, it just blows my mind over and over again. I think I'm going to leave you with a hot take if this is the last question. Maybe not a hot take, but anybody who's read my coverage, listened to my podcast, or heard me on the show knows the way that my brain operates. And when I watched the Georgia game in person last week, they are bigger, stronger, and faster than a Florida team that just didn't have the talent to match up. And hopefully Billy Napier will rectify that here in the next few years. But as it pertains to this year, that's the case. So if Georgia is playing in an air-conditioned dome at the end of the year, with the way that they arrive at the ball with physicality, the way they maul you on both sides of the line of scrimmage, and the top-tier talent that they have at the skill position players, I feel like there are only two teams that are equipped to compete with Georgia in a game that resembles the environment that the Ohio State-Georgia game did last year. And that's Ohio State and Alabama. Now, people have kind of put Alabama on the back burner because of the way that they've been dysfunctional with their quarterback situation at the beginning of the year and the fact they lost to Texas. But you have to have a certain baseline level of talent in this sport to exist and operate in that type of a game. And I'm not trying to disparage Florida State, Michigan, Washington, Oregon, Oklahoma, even Texas to a certain extent. But when we get into this game, who is going to be equipped to line up against that team and go blow for four quarters? And I have thoughts about the 247 sports composite rankings and the way that we view talent. It's changing. The transfer portal has created a world where Florida State has taken 2- and 3-star players from other programs and now has getting first-round production out of those players like Keon Coleman and Jared Verse and Jordan Travis. Like, all those things play into it. But from a 85-man roster, top to bottom, are we certain that Washington, for as fun as they are to watch this year, is equipped physically and athletically to beat Georgia in a game like that? Like, so we are existing in this world right now with college football where there's more parity or perceived parity than we've ever had before. Michigan could win the national title. Florida State could. Washington. We all believe that right now. But there's a certain instinct in my brain and in my heart when watching that game in Jacksonville last week, that these teams, for as good as they are and as entertaining they are to watch, they physically will not be able to beat them when it matters the most at the end of the year because they don't have the athletes. And one day, when the transfer portal is more rampant and players are moving more and coaches have 50 players out of 85 that are from different places, maybe the numbers will get muddied a little bit. But I'm very excited to watch this Alabama game. And if Alabama gets into Atlanta, I guarantee if you shot truth serum into the side of Kirby Smart's neck and you said, which one of these teams do you not want to face, he does not want to play Alabama more than any other team in the SEC, even in a year that's perceived to be down. So I think there's a lot to still be, you know, in college football to be decided, more games to settle, who's going to win the Big Ten. But if Kirby Smart was being honest and forced to be truthful and he said, hey, who would you not want to play in a dome with all the marbles on the line, he would tell you Ohio State and Alabama. Fans don't want to hear it, but it's the truth.
There's nobody better to listen to about the talent in college football than Ari Wasserman. Thank you so much, Ari. We will talk to you soon. We are heading to the break. Back with more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.